Yes. Hey guys, this is James. Welcome to Most High Show. I'm here with Christian. Today, we're going to talk about connection, the importance of connection in recovery.
Yeah.
How important it's been to me. I'm sure it's been very important in your own recovery.
Absolutely.
It's a pretty broad topic, but
yeah,
a lot of space to cover there.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right, so this is the Most High Show. My name is Christian, sitting with James.
And, hey, guys.
Really glad to have you back.
Thanks for having me back, man. It's always awesome to be here, man.
Yeah.
Always a great opportunity.
Yeah, I think the first time we did a podcast about a year ago almost, we did step 7.
Yeah.
And I remember my wife and I both just sitting there kind of going, man, this guy's like, we felt like family right away. So talking about connection, I think it's important to note that there's certain people you come across the span of your life, and it's like, okay, we don't got to do a lot of storytelling to have that sense of connection. And mm-hmm. I think that's been my experience with you. So really blessed to have you here kicking it.
Thanks, man. Yeah. And I'll tell you, the best part is like the opportunity we had to recognize when that connection is being made
right
now, because I mean, think how many people come and go out of your life.
Yeah.
You know, just in a day, how many people you come into contact with.
Yeah.
You know, now that sort of fuzziness has been lifted.
Right.
For me, I get an opportunity to see like who, you know, who is worth connecting with, really.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot more often than it used to.
Yeah.
Now that I've got this the recovery in my life. So
right.
It's pretty cool.
There's I did a 1 minute Devo. We used to shoot these 1 minute Devos. We might start doing them again. And it was about seeing somebody. And so you kind of take the example of your local barista or something, and you go in every day and you get your coffee, and you know, you order your coffee and they give you the coffee. And for the most part, that person is there. You're not demeaning that person, but in all reality, they're just a means to your consumption of caffeine.
Correct.
Really. But then one day you are in a good mood and you take a second and go, hey, what's your name, or where are you from, and you find out some sort of commonality between the two of you, and then you begin to see that person. All of a sudden there's something that happens, and that's, I think this is what we're talking about with connection. There's just something that happens between you and that person. Now that person is no longer a means to your caffeine, but now that person has a name, they have a story, they have an identity in your life, right? And so that could be the depth of that connection, but it is a connection, right?
Right.
So, I think that's important, because I think a lot of us do go, and specifically like when we're in active addiction, or when somebody is not in a state of awareness of who they are and what they're doing on this planet, then they're existing kind of in this things where everybody is a means to an end. Just like in addiction, like people were just a means to an end for me. They weren't like, I didn't actually enjoy people.
Sure. Right?
It was just a means to an end.
You had to deal with them.
I had to deal with them to get what I wanted.
Yeah.
Rarely what I wanted was a person. Right.
Right.
It was whatever that person could do for me.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I think that's what you're talking about, when the veils relieved, you see clearly now, and you're going, oh, maybe I actually like other people.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten to that point where you actually enjoy other people's company?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, for me, people were just sort of, the only way I could really make any sort of connection with people before was mm-hmm. through drugs and alcohol. That was the bridge
right.
for me to connect. But it was always obviously an artificial connection with me. And it was just something that I had to tolerate people long enough to get to what I wanted.
Yeah.
Which for me was just getting, you know, getting effed up.
Yeah.
Often.
Yeah.
Daily. Because as soon as I would get what I needed, the next step for me was withdrawal,
yeah,
and isolation,
yeah,
which is the direct opposite, yeah, of connection. So I could not wait to get to the place where I could isolate myself,
uh-huh,
just me and my addiction.
Man, that really resonates, because it's really like I can just imagine those days of, like, you know, getting the bag and sharing a little bit and then being like,
just out,
okay,
of obligation, just, yeah, because, like, you're here.
Yeah. And then kind of going, okay, I'm going home now. And it's like, yes, it's just me, yeah, and this substance. And
off to the races.
Yeah. Full back throttle. To normal. I'm, yeah, going in. And yeah, it's really interesting. But there's a reason why we brought this. You brought this topic up to us, and you said that you've been experiencing this. Like, I guess it's been illuminated for you this importance.
Yes.
Can you explain to me why? And you have some time in recovery, mm-hmm, right? So
a little bit
of time, some days in a row, and which is a whole nother topic about the hierarchy of time, and. You know, it's like, oh, someone's got like a year more than me, then they're somehow like superior to me, and it's kind of ridiculous.
Some people ascribe to that.
A lot of people,
for sure,
do. I mean, it's all ego, I think, in some, sure, sense of the way. But and also, if someone's got 20 years, I mean, I guess you probably could listen to what they have to say. But if their life sucks, you probably don't. I don't want to divert from the importance of connection, but. What I'm saying to you is, and why I'm saying it is that this is not a on or off switch. You're sober or you're not sober. There, as we continue a life of sobriety, day after day, year after year, there's levels to this, and you get on a new level, and you go, oh, I've never been here before, and it's just as challenging as it's quality problem. Right, it's problems, but the quality of the problem has changed, and so correct me if I'm wrong, but that's kind of like what you're acknowledging now. Oh, this connection thing is really important, and so tell me about that, and why do you see it as important for you?
Well, whether or not I'm connected with my own sobriety, and connected certainly with reaching out with other people. It directly dictates how I feel. I mean, it has a direct correlation on how I feel, how I act, how strong I feel in my own sort of sobriety, and yeah, really how comfortable I feel in my own skin. I can easily revert to that place I was where. There was always something in between making a full connection with, yeah, with people.
You talked about that earlier, about the sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never truly experienced, and I thought I had,
mm-hmm,
but I had never really truly experienced until recently, till I've been lucky enough to get into the middle of, you know, and actively participate in my own recovery. I always felt, you know, my entire life, I was sort of on the outer edges of whatever scene I happened to find myself in, you know, never, yeah, really fully, a part of anything at all. And for the first time in my life, I feel like I am fully in the middle of my own recovery. I'm fully a part of this. And every once in a while, I'm lucky enough to participate and help somebody else,
yeah,
in their own journey,
yeah,
of recovery.
Yeah.
You know, and I get to get out of my own self and work, yeah, with other people and really plug into this.
Yeah.
And what's funny, it is readily available anytime that I want it. You know, especially here where we live in the Atlanta area.
Yeah.
You know, with given the abundance of recovery that's, right, in this town. I mean, we, yeah, can go just almost any time, anywhere.
Yeah, and find
something. And get a piece of it. Now I don't always do it as often as I should, but when I do, it makes all the difference for me.
You don't always want it, right? It's like there's Well, I know for me, I rarely sit and go, oh yeah, I want to go connect with people, but I'm obedient to the process.
Right.
Right. And to the principles of this.
Right.
And then I come home and go, oh, thank God I got out of this house and went and connected.
100% of the time, right? Yeah. Every single time.
Every single time.
You know, and there's always that reluctance at first, like, yeah, I could sit here and just kind of chill. It's really comfortable. It's hot outside.
Yeah.
You know, and that meeting's across town and those people are over there.
Yeah.
But every time I just sort of, God forbid, get out of my comfort zone just a little bit.
Yeah.
And get there. Absolutely 100% of the time. I walk away from that situation glad that I did that. Glad that I interacted with somebody. Glad that I went in, and even if I just sit there and listen for an hour.
It's pretty humbling, you know, because I think that there's a false sense of self, a version of ourselves that thinks that we are not connected. And you are connected, whether you acknowledge it or not. Those connections may be to toxicity and things. But the concept that, you know, that you can exist not connected, you know, is a very new thing. Definitely a Western thing. Definitely an American thing, right? Because, I mean, I don't remember living in L.A. specifically. I mean, you could exist and go from your house to your car to your work, from your work to your car back to your house, and rarely have an interaction with anybody that was significant in any way, you know? And so people start actually believing this, that, oh, I'm not, I don't need nobody, right? And even in recovery, you might not be consuming a substance or alcohol, but if you have that delusion that, oh, I don't need to be connected to anybody, then I think you're missing a huge part of what it means to be a human. You know, I think I think for us humans, we're tribalistic by nature. We gather together. It's a reptilian brain thing, right? We are. And so whether we're going to gather together and lift each other up and care for each other and love each other, or we're going to gather together and blow dope and cause criminal behaviors, that's deciding which way we want to engage. But the idea that you can be disconnected and exist without another person it's kind of ridiculous, right?
But I think for me, at least, I didn't want to be connected to other people for the longest time because I had such a sense of guilt and shame.
Yeah, talk about it.
Where I didn't want, the closer I get to people, the more exposed that's going to get.
Yeah.
And so it was, so you end up on that cycle of I've got this shame because I'm using, and I'm using because I have this shame, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And then that just naturally for me led to just trying to get, you know, just doing the obligatory things where I have to interact with people to a minimum.
Right.
You know, as minimal as interaction as I could get away with.
Yeah.
To where I could get back to that place where I thought I was comfortable, which for me was just in isolation. And a lot of times, especially, you know, the last year of my illustrious drinking career was drinking alone on a very regular basis.
Right.
And making as few connections as possible, because I'd really at that point lost any sense of authenticity, you know, and you know, the more I am connected, the more now, the more I'm connected, the more I get an opportunity to be authentic, to be honest about what's really going on in my life.
Yeah. Well, and that's a lot of that's because you've done the work.
Correct.
Of the steps.
We're talking about and find it.
4, 5, 6, and 7.
Exactly.
And 8 and 9, really, right? Those steps lead you to that freedom, to where you actually then, you don't have that guilt and shame kind of pulling the strings in the back, you know? And so I think that's also like when you're continuing in sobriety, you know, for me personally, it's like, yeah, I went through the steps every year for the first 4 or 5 years. and now I'm going through them again, and just recently did a fifth step again because there were things that I needed to get out. And I've noticed that it's like each time that I go through that process, and practice it in all my affairs, right? Then I get a little closer. I get a little, especially like in my family, you know, I'm more present. I'm able to be more present, which has been a direct result from my most recent, doing my most recent fifth step and working those, that it's like, oh, now I'm actually here. And I've observed myself a couple times, even this last weekend, going, wait a minute, I'm like actually here right now.
Physically, right? Mentally, emotionally.
Yeah.
In all those different levels.
What a trip.
Yeah. And that's a gift. That's a gift that we get by doing the work.
Doing the work is you get that connection. And so, you know, that's why when you, if you're early in sobriety and you're listening to this, that's why your sponsor and the people in the rooms are like, get to four. You want to get you there, because we know the freedom that comes from that. Not to say that the first three steps are not amazing and powerful and need to be worked honestly and rigorously. But sometimes people get stuck in this kind of one through three and they're still working two and it's been 6 months. It's like, mm-hmm. dude, like, the way I did it in the program that I did it through, the fellowship that I did it through, we were on a schedule and we all met together. It was a group that did it. So when the week came up and it was time to do step four, you needed to show up with your homework. There was no like, when are you ready for it? It was like, you need to do it. And I think I'm glad that that was the process that I went through, because I probably would have really dilly-dallied with that one, you know. And we know a lot of guys and girls, people in recovery, they fear this so much. And it's like, I think we fear that it's, you know, it's like you said, that you get programmed in your brain that to let someone close is to let someone hurt you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And speaking of step four, you know, I don't know if you've ever, there's a lot of worksheets floating out around.
Yeah.
Around step four. And what that provided for me was going through that work, because there are, you deal with fear, resentments,
yes.
harms,
yeah.
talk about your sexual conduct,
yeah.
and there a lot. So not only does that give, what step four for me did for me was help me start to connect with what was going on in my head and make a real connection with myself and start connecting what was going on here in my head with what is in my heart and start bridging that gap, because you know, one of my biggest fears was just, you know, looking at myself, mm-hmm. and looking at the things that I think about, looking at the things that I've done, you know. But one of the vital parts for me, and with step four in particular, was connecting with my own thoughts and my own feelings and being able to be okay with them and even being able to express those occasionally in a healthy way,
right.
you know, instead of just these random sort of outbursts that I was pretty prone to for a lot of time.
Yeah.
So it's not only just a connection with people in recovery, people outside of recovery, people that you come into contact with on a daily basis, but just being able to connect with things that are going on in your life and being able to express those with the people that are close to you now as a result of your recovery and the work that you've done.
Yeah.
You know, but that it's that connection for me that was really important.
No, that's so true. You know, I think when that's connected, right, your brain and your heart and whatever those things are, whatever's happening there, you know, it brings you into the present. And I really believe that, like, you know, whatever God is, wherever God is, it's now. Right?
Absolutely. God, yes.
Because anytime I'm over there and back there, I'm not here. And I can't really connect if I'm not here. And that's a lot of the work has resulted in that, you know, I was telling some guys the other day about Brother Lawrence, who was this old monk and had all these letters that he wrote. He was a very low-level monk, right? This kind of monk that was lucky to get into the monastery, okay? And so his job was peeling potatoes and cutting carrots. Like, he can't even put these things in the pot. Like, he's not a very glamorous monk. But this bishop, who's like in the bishop of this of their region or whatever, high-level, powerful monk, and comes in, notices something about this guy, Brother Lawrence. And Brother Lawrence is in a joyous mood. Brother Lawrence has this spirit of peace and something steady about him. And so he takes interest in Brother Lawrence and asks Brother Lawrence, what do you do and what's going on? And so Brother Lawrence says, well, my purpose is to practice the presence of God. So Brother Lawrence was always mindful about, and he lived in the 1600s. This is back in the day, right? So his focus is always on I'm always in the presence of God. So he's, any thought that he's having, he's trying to reconnect that thought, right? It seems kind of ridiculous. But there was something about him. When he died, no big funeral, no big deal, right? I mean, other than his brothers mourned him in the monastery, he was no person of influence. But this bishop went to his room and found all his writings. And he had all these writings about his practicing of the presence of God. And so they collected all these writings together. And if you look it up online, there's all these books about it. And it's very spiritual and not religious. You know, it's very, very spiritual that, you know, and he talks about things in a very raw way about having to go to the store in town and feeling very insecure about that and having to lean on his connection with God, right? Like,
okay,
to get to the store. And do this because it's like he, like I said, he wasn't a educated, you know, guy. He wasn't, you know, he was a low level monk. And so, I really, once I was exposed to Brother Lawrence, it really brought that concept up of this, the presence of God and whatever God is, and connecting and being and maintaining that connection. And I think we find that when we connect with other humans, right? You kind of get that, that thing. Were you saying that earlier? Someone was saying that earlier about that's when you sense the God connection.
Sure. That's when, I mean, for me,
yeah,
it's when a higher power for me has always been sort of a vague terminology for me. And like, and if somebody were to tell me or were to ask me like, how would you define God? You know, obviously it's going to be,
we're using that name or that word, but
correct.
Right.
But for me, like, that is when I feel the closest to my higher power, is when I am, when I'm presently connected.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm really paying attention to what's going on immediately and trying to be present for what's happening right here, right now.
Yeah.
Like we're doing here.
Yeah,
you know, and not worrying about like where I'm going to go to dinner later on tonight, which I'm kind of hungry, but that's a whole nother subject, I guess. But, you know, but that makes a lot of, that's a great story. I'm going to have to do some research on
look
that
him
now.
Up.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're talking about the importance of connection and, you know, we want people to connect here. What we're doing here is, you know, it's not like we have this, like we're sharing this mic. We want to pass the mic. So if people want to talk about stuff like this, you have things like this, you have experience with things like this, you know, there's topics that you have on your heart that you want to share, you know, that we want to, this is a platform for everybody in recovery. And so I want to make sure to mention that's the idea of where we're going with this, is to make this more of a collective, you know, that we're not just, doesn't have to be me in this seat or you in this seat. It can be whoever, you know, as long as we're offering and talking about, you know, being authentic and real.
Yeah, keeping it real.
Yeah.
And that's what it, you know, I'll tell you, when I first came and did, the first podcast with you.
Yeah.
I mean, there was quite a bit of sort of trepidation and sort of, I was intimidated.
Yeah.
You know, because I had listened to some of the things that have been put out, and I, you know, I sort of naturally feel like sort of intellectually inferior in a lot of ways, because I'd listened to some of the things that you and your gang had produced up until then. But I'll tell you, it's such a comforting format here, because I know that all I have to do is show up and just talk about, you know, just talk about what's on my mind and just keep it real. And you've always given me and people I've seen just latitude to just sort of talk about their own experiences in recovery. And that's really what this whole thing is all about. Just getting, you know, in touch with other people's experiences and their own points of view in recovery. It's that simple. It doesn't have to be anything grandiose every time. It's just a conversation of, you know, alcoholics and addicts talking with each other about what's going on in real time.
It ain't unsolved mysteries.
No, there really is not. And that's funny, because that's how kind of I thought, well, what do I have to offer?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you have to offer your experience. And so many, just like when you go, we go to whatever meetings you go to, that's what you're doing. People are sharing their experience, and you're sitting there going, oh my gosh, that's my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then you walk out feeling a little bit better, a little less anxious, a little more connected, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, because I do want to be real. I still don't feel 100% comfortable in all rooms. I still kind of beeline it out if I'm in a place for the first time. And I'm not sure why I do that still. You know, it takes me a while. I've been more intentional about getting numbers, you know. But sometimes if I don't feel it, I don't force it. You know, I'm not like, if I don't feel a connection to somebody, or there was somebody that I, you know, and it's not a natural thing, I don't kind of like, excuse me, I got to get this guy's number to interrupt your conversation. Like, I don't do that. I kind of like let it kind of go.
A little more organically, right?
Yeah. But again, like, I'm not in a state of, you know, I'm not craving drugs and alcohol, you know, the obsession in a lot of ways is gone for me. Not to say I don't think about it sometimes, but the obsession is most definitely gone.
So there's not that urgency.
I don't feel, I can go home not having gotten a phone number.
Right.
I got enough phone numbers, but, you know, I feel like I still want to say that, because I do, like, whenever I get into these group environments, you know, it's like I'm too 12-step for Christianity, and I'm too Christianity for 12-step, and I'm way too much of a cusser for this group of people, and, you know. I still, you know, and God willing, this is 8 years this month, so I'm still working on that part of it, you know. But again, my higher power, whatever God is, has just been so gracious to bring these people. It's like you guys fly in on wings and just boom. And I'm like, oh, so then it's like when I look and I take an inventory of my life, I look at my life, I go, wow, this guy's here. You know, this person came in, and this person. And it's like, wow. Then I see that God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself, and creating these connections for me. When I will still feel a little bit awkward after a meeting, and we'll kind of beeline it out. I also don't smoke, so I don't get to do that, which is a great way to connect. So,
but the opportunity is still yours every time you go into one of those rooms.
Mine.
But think about early on when, at least for me, early on for me, when I was starting out in recovery, one of the things that just, you know, people were hammering into me was like, hang around. Get numbers, build a network. And I didn't know why. I mean, I didn't get it at first. And it was exactly because they knew that it was vital to start making those connections with people. Because up to the point where I started in my own recovery, up to that point, I had been living in isolation for so long.
Right.
That just the most generic conversations for me were a struggle. So I would be, for the longest time, I would be the last one who showed up and the first one to leave. And I just couldn't figure out why this wasn't, this was not taking, you know?
Yeah.
But then I started sticking around and awkwardly standing there and just sort of injecting myself into conversations. And I was told, look, everyone had to do this at some point or another.
Yeah.
So don't think you're doing anything special.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I said, okay. Cause I wanted, at that point I was so desperate and I needed it. So I wanted it so bad that I was willing to do that, to stand there like a dope with my hat in my hand interrupt conversations and just go up to random people and be like, can I get your number? And then actually using those numbers and just cold calling people,
right?
You know, because you know, the first 6-9 months, you know, I didn't know what to do with myself. I wanted, my only alternative at that point when I was bored, I would drink, you know, didn't have anything going, I would drink.
Yeah.
So instead I would pick up the 1,000-pound phone and call people. And that's where I started making those connections with people and started relating to people and started learning how to share.
Yeah.
Authentically with people. And then I started to feel a part of, you know, the rooms, and so I would walk in and I would know people's names now.
Yeah.
And it has just exponentially grown.
Yeah.
As a result of that. And now, you know, I see people that were in that same position as I was, just that look on their face, like, what do I do now? And I get the opportunity to approach them.
Right.
Like, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
But absolutely. That it's because it was being demonstrated to me that how important connection was. You've got to connect to the people in order to connect to this program.
Yeah.
Or else you're going to be right back out the door again, right? Because you've got no foundation. You have nobody to call on.
Yeah.
Nobody to count on.
Absolutely. I mean, I talk to multiple people every day, and I take the calls when they ring, you know, and when I feel feelings that I don't want to feel, or that I'm sure if I keep on this feeling, it's not going to go somewhere great, I get on the phone or quickly. And sometimes I got to get 3 numbers in, you know, before someone will answer. And, but eventually someone will, and I'll get it out and minimize the damage in some sense.
Yeah.
You know? And for me, again, like, it's not in a state of like, oh, I'm going to go drink if I don't get someone to pick up. For some people it is. But still the discomfort I feel is just as terrible as anything else. You know what I mean? Like,
I sure do.
I want to have a holistic approach to my life. I want to be connected. And I measure the success of my sobriety by how well I'm connected to those closest to me. And when I'm experiencing that kind of thing, and not in a dysfunctional way, but I want to address it because I know what it's like to be sober and unhappy. And you're not even getting the benefits of being high. You know, it's just like, it just sucks. So address the stuff quickly. And that's what I keep learning. And the more conversations I have, the more I find out. Address it quickly. Next time, before you're going to go have that conversation, call someone first.
Yeah.
Call your sponsor or whoever will answer the phone and say, this is what I'm thinking. And let somebody said it's harder. The harder they laugh at you is the more stupid your idea is.
But again, like, that's the importance of having those resources in your back pocket ready to go. Cause you never know when those feelings are going to crop up, when those crazy ass thoughts are going to crop up. But because you have put the work in, you've got those connections at your disposal.
Right.
You know, and you can plug in 24/7 on an emergency basis when and if you need it, because you never know.
Yeah.
You know, luckily for me, those instances today for me are few and far between, but they do happen. I have to, you know, after a particularly nutso day at work, I'll have to call somebody and talk to somebody on my drive home because just made a jackass of myself, you know, or just done or sort of reverted to my old behavior, my crazy behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to keep from taking that to the extreme, which for me is picking up a drink,
mm-hmm.
I have to throw that connection in front of it and reach out to somebody else.
And we're kind of talking about step 10, right?
Yeah.
That, and we've been doing this 12-2 thing, and the guy Dan who was facilitating said that, and I always had read that as promptly say sorry to who you know you did something wrong to. But he kind of explained it as like, it's not always that. Sometimes it's just getting on the phone with somebody else who wasn't there, who has nothing to do with it, who's just understands your journey and admitting where you went wrong. Right. Yeah. And then, because sometimes making an apology will make things worse, because we think it was this big thing in our heads. Oh my God, I must have. And that person that might have not even, it might even have not even crossed their mind, you know? So I really liked that, and I've been practicing that. So when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. And as I've learned to admit it to other people, not necessarily always the person who I've wronged, it's helped me to get a better objective view on what the situation was and then learn how to best repair it or move forward, right? Like sometimes you ruin a relationship for a day. Sometimes you ruin it for an hour. And sometimes you haven't even done any of that. You've just all in your head. Mm-hmm. So, and there's been plenty of times that's happened. So, you know, I really am glad that we talked about this. I think it was great. I hope that if anybody's listened and they've gotten to this far, to this point, we have a book from Reverend Sarah Bowen called Spiritual Rebel. And if you're listening to this, you're listening to the sound of my voice, then you can email me at contact@themosthighshow.com. contact@themosthighshow.com, and we'll send you a book for free. Unless you live like across the country, then you're going to, or across the universe, then we're going to need some shipping.
They still do COD?
Yes.
Okay.
I think. I don't know.
Send it COD.
Yeah. Not very many people have taken us up on this. So it's not. It's hidden in the back of the podcast. Holla at your boy if you want that book.
Y'all can come to the studio and share your story sometime too.
Same
email. Always an opportunity here.
Yep. Thanks, man. Thanks for sharing, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
See you guys.